This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington, and here is what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
Prime Minister Abiy was an inspiring leader who won the Nobel Peace Prize. Now he needs to step up and make sure that his own people in Tigray are getting the protections that they need and deserve.
That was new U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken, who says he is trying to end violence against civilians in Ethiopia's Tigray region. Also, former Somali President Ali Mahdi Mohamed has died at age 83. And saying they are global terrorists, the U.S. has blacklisted two groups, one in the DRC and another in Mozambique. All these and more ahead on Africa News Tonight. We start with our top story. New U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken says he has been on the phone repeatedly with Ethiopian Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed and other leaders in the region to find a way to end the violence against civilians in the country's Tigray region. Blinken told the congressional delegation that he strongly condemns what he calls acts of ethnic cleansing in Tigray.
At this point, we have two other challenges that go to the security piece. One is we have, forces from Eritrea that are there, and we have forces from an adjoining region, Amhara, that are there. They need to come out, and a force that will not abuse the human rights of the people of Tigray or commit acts of ethnic cleansing, which we've seen in Western Tigray, that has to stop. We also need full accountability. We need to get an independent investigation into what took place there. And we need some kind of process, a reconciliation process, so that the country can move forward politically. Prime Minister Abiy was an inspiring leader who won the Nobel Peace Prize. Now he needs to step up and make sure that his own people in Tigray are getting the protections that they need and deserve.
Fighting in Tigray has caused a humanitarian crisis, raising international concerns that the unrest could spread. Yesterday, the deputy chief of mission at the Ethiopian embassy in Washington, Brahane Kidana Mariam, issued a letter of resignation to protest what he called the genocidal war in Tigray and oppression and destruction the government is inflicting on the rest of the country. Global crime-fighting agencies are warning that criminals could use long-established underground networks and methods to smuggle falsified COVID-19 vaccines. Only a few African countries have started immunizations, so demand is high. Some in law enforcement say criminals are already importing fake and substandard vaccines from their contacts in Asia to sell at huge profit. Darren Taylor reports.
International anti-crime agencies say criminals have for decades cultivated routes and methods to traffic illegal medicines. One of the most popular is the painkiller codeine. If abused, the addictive opioid can cause organ failure and conditions such as schizophrenia. Codeine syrup addiction is a crisis across Africa.
We bought on a Sunday from a company directly from the storeroom. They even had to remove the storeroom seal from it. And so we took it from inside the company and went our way.
That was Nigerian investigative journalist Ruona Maya, who has infiltrated illegal medicine networks in West Africa. Her work reveals that organized crime groups are paying pharmaceutical company employees to steal medicines. Maya says corrupt collaborators in civil service and law enforcement, including customs inspectors, are sometimes on the criminal's payroll too. She says because of the sky-high profits to be made from COVID-19 vaccines, crime groups are shifting attention away from medicines such as codeine and toward falsified and stolen coronavirus shots.
First of all, you need to have a rogue inside whatever company it is. And then you now have to have a system of movement. to where there was no regulatory system, where you could do business even outside of work hours.
Maya says lack of regulation will apply to most of Africa's vaccine rollouts because the infrastructure and standardization aren't in place to ensure otherwise. Criminals thrive on these gaps, she says, and whenever processes are speeded up and bypassed, they jump in and swap genuine medicines with falsified and substandard versions.
The first thing you need in any of these systems is someone that is hiding in plain sight and has access to the supply. When you do get that supply, then you do need foot soldiers that will now distribute it.
Maya's seen many cases of health workers doing people so-called favors and taking them to pharmaceutical company representatives. The client, in desperate need of a medicine they've been told is out of stock, then ends up buying fake or overpriced drugs. In West Africa, Maya says, the traffickers keep their contraband in places that appear legitimate.
They sometimes store the products in, we call them chemists, but they are more like shops, pharmacies. They will store a lot of it there. It doesn't always necessarily mean that this is an actual qualified pharmacist that runs that shop. But they will find somewhere that is like a medicine store, let me put it like that, and store it there.
She explains that the criminals mix their fakes with genuine medicine.
Occasionally, this type of storehouses are actually manned by qualified, certified, practicing pharmacists. So you have rogues there as well. And then people can come and buy piecemeal, or those who are distributing will come and take it off from there. So we had...
She says the traffickers usually base their operations on city outskirts or in more isolated towns with weaker regulations and law enforcement.
People are very, very careful with how codeine is sold or transported in Lagos. By the time you get to the border towns and the border countries, it's a free-for-all.
Maya says many African authorities have an attitude that once something bad leaves our country, it's not our problem. If this lack of solidarity happens now, she says, criminals pushing the potentially dangerous fake or substandard jabs will have even more space. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
Tanzania's main opposition leader, Tundu Lissu, says his sources in Kenya report that President John Magufuli is in a hospital in Nairobi suffering from COVID-19. Tanzania government officials have not commented on the claim. Reuters reported that Kenya's foreign ministry and the Nairobi hospital both said they had no information to disclose. Magufuli was last seen in public on February 27th. Magufuli has denied that COVID-19 is in his country and urged Tanzanians to put their trust on prayer and homemade treatments. However, the Catholic leaders in the country and others have urged citizens to take precautions against the virus. Lissu fled Tanzania because he said his life was in danger after losing last year's presidential election. He now lives in Belgium. Last night, he spoke with VOA's James Buddy about President Magufuli.
Magufuli is in Nairobi. He's in hospital, the Nairobi hospital. And he's been in Nairobi, from my information, since Monday evening.
He denies being political about his allegations that Magufuli is ill.
There are rumors swelling on the social media that the president is very sick with COVID-19. He has had a cardiac arrest. He's in Nairobi. So if I'm being political, then they should answer these questions. Where is the president and what is his state of health?
That was Tanzanian opposition politician Tundu Lissu speaking to James Buddy, host of VOA's Daybreak Africa. Former Somali President Ali Mahdi Mohamed, whose bitter power struggle with late rebel leader Mohamed Farah Aidid saw the country fall into violence and famine that still plagues it today, has died at age 83. As the death toll from hunger rose in late 1992, with unrest keeping aid agencies from getting food to the needy, the United States led an international coalition into Somalia to ensure shipments could get through. That led to a brief period of relative peace before the international coalition came under attack as U.S. forces began pulling out and chaos resumed. Ali Mahdi was appointed president by loyalists of the United Somali Congress, USC, the rebel group that deposed the late dictator Mohamed Siad Barre in January 1991. But his rule was immediately challenged by Idid, and the capital Mogadishu was left as a battleground divided into sections run by the two warlords. Officials in Mogadishu and members of al-Mahdi's family announced his death at a Nairobi hospital yesterday. The family said he fell ill last week and was flown out to Kenya for further treatment. Current President Mohamed Farmajo and a host of several opposition politicians described Ali Mahdi as a man who loved his country. Ivory Coast Prime Minister Hamid Bakayoko has died in Germany, where he sought medical treatment last month. President Alassane Ouattara said Bakayoko died of cancer just 2 days after his 56th birthday. Appointed by Ouattara last July following the death of Prime Minister Gon Coulibaly, he has been seen as a possible successor to the president. Ouattara described the late prime minister as a great statesman, a model for the youth, a personality of great generosity and exemplary loyalty. The government said in a statement on Friday that Ouattara had met Bakayoko during a visit in France the previous week, and given the state of the minister's health, it was recommended that his hospitalization should be extended. On Monday, Ouattara named Patrick Achi as interim prime minister. Ethiopia is rapidly advancing its Renaissance Dam project despite Egypt's warning that the water share from the Blue Nile will run short without a binding agreement on how to fill and operate the massive structure. Ethiopia has renewed its refusal to invite an international quartet committee to include the United Nations, the European Union, and the United States to mediate stalled negotiations. Ethiopian Foreign Ministry spokesman Dina Mufti said Ethiopia believes in continuing the negotiations through the African Union. VOA senior analyst Mohamed El-Shenawi discussed these developments with Joseph Siegel, director of research at the Africa Center for Strategic Studies in Washington.
I think it's important to remember that the key points of dispute around the dam are technical in nature. You know, they're about how quickly Ethiopia should take to fill up the dam, how that is going to affect water flow in times of extended drought, and how that would be addressed. And then to agree on a dispute resolution mechanism for potential future disagreements. Given the technical nature of these issues, it's logical to try to keep the negotiations at a local level, at an experts level, so that they can come to terms on these technical matters without making them a political point of discussion. And so the AU provides a natural forum for this and has been an ongoing forum for these discussions for some time. I think the concern by Sudan and Egypt is that at this point, Ethiopia does not feel any urgency to come to an agreement, that it feels that it's filling up the dam and there isn't any concrete end date for the negotiations. And so Egypt and Sudan are hoping that by bringing in international actors, it can exert more pressure on Ethiopia to bargain in good faith and come to a more timely resolution of the negotiations.
Ethiopian spokesperson also stressed that Ethiopia has the natural and legal right to utilize its water resources fairly and equitably without causing significant harm to downstream countries. However, Ethiopia is planning a second filling and an expansion of the dam's height without any agreement with Sudan or Egypt. What is the way out of the troubled negotiations between the three countries?
Well, it's interesting. When these negotiations began, Ethiopia's key objective was to establish its right to tap the headwaters of the Blue Nile, which originate in Ethiopia, for its domestic needs. You know, at this point, that objective has widely been recognized by Sudan and Egypt. So really, the focus now is on the second part of that statement, that how does Ethiopia tap these resources without damaging the interest of the downstream countries, Sudan and Egypt? And I think that's really the focus of the negotiations now, is how can Ethiopia, as a reliable partner, demonstrate and provide assurances to the downstream countries that they won't be harmed by the actions that Ethiopia is taking. And I think that is the more broad-based perspective that needs to be brought into to the discussion that Ethiopia needs to understand for this process to move forward. It isn't just a matter of getting what it can out of this, but how does it create an ongoing, you know, mechanism, an ongoing forum for collaboration among these countries that are all sharing the same resources, so that there will be a trust and a sense of reliability that each side will be able to access the water that it needs.
That was Joseph Siegel, Director of Research at the Africa Center for Strategic Studies in Washington, speaking with VOA Senior Analyst Mohammed El-Shenawi. The United States has blacklisted two Islamist groups, one in the Democratic Republic of Congo and the other in Mozambique. According to a Reuters report, the groups designated as foreign terrorist organizations are the Allied Democratic Forces, or ADF, in Congo, led by Seka Musa Baluku, and the Ahulu Suna Wa Jama group in Mozambique, led by Abu Yasir Hassan. ADF is a Ugandan insurgent faction that has been active since the 1990s. It is known for brutal reprisal attacks on civilians in the eastern DRC. The Ahulu Sana Wajana group, known in Mozambique as Al-Shabaab, is known for its beheadings and attacks since 2017. The groups are now denied entry to the U.S., and any of their U.S.-related assets will be frozen. The designation also bans Americans from doing business with them and makes it a crime to provide support or resources to these movements. The main civil service council in Zimbabwe warns it may call for a strike as it pushes the government to return to the negotiating table over demands for salary increases. Their talks last year ended with compromise and pledge to resume negotiations in January. Reporter Kuzai Zenwashi has the details.
Gibson Mushangu is the secretary of the Apex Council, which represents all civil servants at the National Joint Council, or NJC, where they hold civil service income negotiations.
On 9 March, we wrote to the government through the Honorable Minister of Public Service, Labour and Social Welfare, Professor Paul Mafima, with a notification of intention to serve notice of our job action. The government is willfully disregarding the NJNC resolution of December 2020, which is stated that the NJNC would meet early January 2021 to craft a roadmap towards the restoration of the value of wages to the pre-October 2018 level. And noticing that we are well into 2021, the employers yet to call for the agreed NJNC as it is its mandate.
Simon Masanga is the permanent secretary in the Ministry of Public Service, Labour and Social Welfare. He confirmed receiving the letter.
Yes, and we are surprised to have received such a letter, because we were in constant touch with Apex and we were finalizing the government position. There was no way we were meant to rush to convene a meeting. It's in government, you need to consult widely.
Masanga says they have a meeting scheduled to iron out all the issues this week.
I thought when we were giving them that feedback, give us a little bit more time. They were not patient enough, but it's okay. We have communicated with them, and I'm sure we are going to hold a meeting on Friday, 10 o'clock. I don't see any confrontation at all. At times, they end up feeling we are not moving with the expected speed. But there is no point in rushing and then fail to bring something to the table. That is what necessitated the delay.
The Apex Council's Mushangu says some civil servants have received a cost of living adjustment, or a COLA. and salary increases in the past few months, but not all.
Yes, we do appreciate the employer's initiative to pay a cola to some sectors of the service, but we are now disgruntled by the discriminatory exclusion of the other sectors, where we are finding a piecemeal approach to such addressing of these challenges. All civil servants are now overdue for a cola. In the light of the steep rise in the cost of living, inflation is hitting each and every day, and all civil servants are now overdue for such adjustments.
Zimbabwe's economy has been in a crisis for more than 2 years, hit by shortages of everything from electricity to cash. The World Bank estimated the annual inflation rate was more than 400% in June of last year. Civil servants, teachers, medical workers have campaigned for salary increases to keep up with the soaring consumer costs. Mushango says the general mood among the civil service now is that the Apex Council should escalate its pressure on the government. He adds that while the letter is a notice, they intend to stage a nationwide strike if they are not taken seriously. Masanga says the government wants to see a happy civil service, and the negotiators are working hard to reach that goal. For VOA, this is Kudzai Zinabashe from Harare.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Iheyes Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbilia Baro, thanks again for tuning in and choosing The Voice of America.
Host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
The Voice of America's Global News Program, International Edition, brings you an in-depth look at the biggest news stories of the day. Nobody covers the world more comprehensively than VOA. Our correspondents gather the news and the views of the most seasoned experts on international issues. Tune in Monday through Friday at 3:30 and 1705 UTC on The Voice of America.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat. African Beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bobo music to hip life, bonga flavor to soukous, Afrobeat to ndombolo and makossa to kwaito. The African beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC, right after the international news.